We invite you to turn in your Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 23. We'll be reading verses 8 through 17. 2 Samuel 23, 8 through 17. Why do we put 2 weeks of revival on the church schedule? Why don't they last? Well, I think the answer is all of us need renewal from time to time. I do. That's what I'm praying for this week. We sing, "Revive us again, fill each heart with thy love. May each soul be rekindled with fire from above." Notice the word "again" and the prefix "re." That means to repeat. We use the words revive, renew, refine. And so our prayer, each one of us, should be that we are rekindled with fire from above. We're going to look at some of David's mighty men, starting at verse 8. These be the names of the mighty men whom David had: the Tachmonite that sat in the seat, chief among the captains. The same was Adino, the Eznite. He lifted up his spear against 800, whom he slew at one time. And after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite, one of the three mighty men with David, when they defied the Philistines that were there gathered together to battle, and the men of Israel were gone away. He arose and smote the Philistines until his hand was weary, and his hand cleaved unto the sword. And the Lord wrought a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to spoil. And after him was Shammah, the son of Agi, the Hararite, and the Philistines were gathered together into a troop where was a piece of ground full of lentils, and the people fled from the Philistines. But he stood in the midst of the ground and defended it and slew the Philistines, and the Lord wrought a great victory. And 3 of the 30 chief went down and came to David in the harvest time unto the cave of Adullam. And the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. And David was then in an hold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. And David longed and said, "Oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." And the three men broke through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord. And he said, "Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives? Therefore he would not drink it. These things did these three mighty men." How many noticed where the bean field was in this reading of Scripture? We'll let Brother Luke explain that. We're going to ask all who are able to kneel as we come to the Lord in prayer.
good to be with you here again this evening. Glad for each one who has come out to take part in the service. I realize that we can call in, we can listen to messages, and there are those I would expect are doing that this evening, and we're glad for those who do, and we're glad for these opportunities. But you know, I feel like when the opportunity is available, there's just nothing quite like being part of the service, being there in presence. You know, I'm not a big sports fan. I probably could get wrapped up into it pretty easily. I'll confess to you, it wouldn't take much for me to get wrapped up in sports. But I don't hear, I know people watch it on television, but you know, they get really excited when they can go to the game and watch it in person. And that's a little bit the way it is, I think, when we get to go to church. We can hear the game, we can hear the message, we can listen on over the airwaves, and it's good, but there's just nothing quite like being there in person. So I'm glad you're here this evening. It's been probably about a month and a half, 2 months, probably around 2 months ago. It was shortly before I gave my sermon topics to Brother George, that a young man in our congregation was teaching our Sunday school lesson, and he asked us to turn to 2 Samuel chapter 23. And as I looked at that, I thought to myself, whatever is he going to get out of this for a Sunday school lesson? This is an adult class. We're not interested. We're not, you know, like children, you tell the little children they're interested in all the big stories of the Old Testament. I thought, what is he going to get from 2 Samuel 23? But that very first Sunday, as he went down through there, we started in there, and I did a little bit of reading ahead. And I came to verse 11. And I don't know how it is for some of you other ministers, but I knew right then and there the Lord had a message. I assume that my English is correct, that the word lentils also means beans. I think that's what it is. If I'm wrong, then we got a different type of field here, but we're going to call it a bean field this evening. As we look down across this list here of David's mighty men, and if you were to turn over to 1 Chronicles chapter 11, we have a parallel passage there of a lot of these same men. And we see here a list of David's mighty men. We refer to them as his mighty men because of the mighty things that they did. We would perhaps call them his elite fighting force. Well, we're not going to take the time and look at all of them here this evening, but there's several of these accounts I would like to look at. And while we are New Testament Christians, and the fact that we do not support war, we do not support the taking of human life, there is many applications that we can look at the dedication that these men had, the effort that they put forward to defend what the Lord had called them to do. We're going to look at several of these mighty victories that was won. In verse 8, we're going to just quickly go over it, and then we'll come back and we'll look a little more in depth. And I know this was already read in our hearing, but I would like to just quickly go over these. We have the man, Adino, the Ezite. It says he lifted up his spear against the Philistines, and he slew 800 at one time. Now, I'm going to say something that I told you yesterday morning and I told you last evening. These are true accounts. This is a historical account. Kind of hard to imagine one man slaying that many of the enemy. Doesn't give us a whole lot of information. So we move down to verses 9 and 10. And we have a man here named Eliezer, the son of Dodo. He was one of the three mighty men, one of the three, one of the top three. The Philistines were gathered together, and he arose, now he was not by himself. He had David and he had two others with him. There was a total of four, if I understand this correctly. It says David and the three that were with him. If you were to turn over to 1 Chronicles, you would find that they were defending a barley field. You see, the Philistines would send out roving bands to gather and steal crops from the land of Israel. I suspect that perhaps the Philistines were not great farmers. But if you know your history, if you do a little bit of research, you'll find that in the land of Israel, in the land that they had, they were very good at their agriculture. So these Philistines, they would come through with martyring bands, raiding and taking and stealing crops from the Israelites. And David and three men happened upon one of these bands. According to the account in 1 Chronicles, it was near a barley field, and they weren't going to give it up. This man, he fought till the end of the day. He was so tired that his hand probably had to be pried from his sword. So tired, so exhausted. But you know what? The Lord wrought a great victory. We look at this and we talk about David's mighty man. This was a mighty man here. He fought till he couldn't fight anymore. But the Lord got the credit. We're going to move on. Verse 11 and 12. This man Shammah. The Philistines were gathered again. Perhaps a very similar situation. It would seem as perhaps they were gathered. Says they were in a troop. We don't know how many that was. But we know that it was enough to send all the rest of the Israelites running. But Shammah said, no, I've got a job to do. I'm going to stand here. I'm going to do what I have to do. And he stood and he defended that field of beans. Verses 13 through 17, we read about David and his desire for a drink of water from his hometown of Bethlehem. They had been forced to hide in a cave of Adullam. And it was in the time of harvest, so it was likely that it was rather hot and dry. The land of Israel can get rather dry. If you remember from reading through the Old Testament, there's often reference to the early rains and the latter rains, the rains that came in the time of planting, rains that came at the time of growing, but then the time of harvest was a hot and a dry time. And we find here that David and his men were holed up in a cave over the time of harvest. So it was likely quite hot and dry. There may have been quite a lack of water. I would suspect that they were probably drinking from stale pools. And David said, oh, if I could just have a drink of fresh, good home water. You know, David grew up in Bethlehem. He wanted some water from home. And three men took off. Said, we'll get you that water. Verse 18, Abishai, David's nephew, it says he slew 300 at once. Verses 20 and 21, Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, he slew two men that were fierce as lions. Later he took on a lion itself in a slippery, snowy pit, and he slew the lion. He went up against an Egyptian who was at least 7.5 feet tall, according to the account here this evening. 1 Chronicles 11 says that his spear shaft was like a weaver's beam, and he went after him with just a staff, and he ended up killing the Egyptian with the Egyptian's own spear. So what can we learn from these men? I would expect you young boys here this evening, if I were to gather you around and ask you if you would kind of like to be like these mighty men. You know, boys in particular are impressed with strength. They're impressed with physical ability. They're impressed with a man's physique and what he can do. And so as we read over these, we think of David. As a boy, he slew Goliath. We read over these mighty men that David had and the things that they did. And I would expect as a small boy, all of our imaginations probably kind of rolled a little bit. We thought about what it must be like to be that strong of a man, that size of a man, that a man with those kinds of abilities. But you know, we don't read anything about these men's size, do we? We do read that God wrought a great victory. Let's look at Eliezer. There's not much given on the first man, Adino. So I'm not going to say a whole lot about him because we don't have a whole lot of information. But he was one of David's mighty men. But in verse 9, as we're going to look a little more in depth here for a bit at Eleazar, it would appear that there were others with David at this time when they met these Philistines. They were near a barley field, and all but David and Eleazar and two others with him, they all fled besides these four, and they stood their ground. The fascinating point here is that it focuses on this man, Eleazar. We don't read how David fought or how the other two men fought. But the emphasis is put on this man, Eleazar. And the interesting point here is that though this man got so weary, he wouldn't give up. He just wouldn't quit. Have you ever worked at your job to the point where you thought you just couldn't go another 5 minutes, but you just have to keep going? I've worked with some people like that. I don't know if I ever quite attained to that status myself, but I have worked with some people that almost wish they would stop and take a break so I could get a break, but they just kept on going. Brothers and sisters, in our spiritual life, I don't know what you have all been called to, but God has a call on your life. God has a plan for your life. This man Eleazar, God had a plan for him that day. Eleazar didn't know exactly what God's plan was. You know, Eleazar didn't know that his name was going to get written in the scriptures, did he? He wasn't letting those Philistines have the barley. He had a job to do. And as long as he was able to stand up, as long as he was able to fight, he was going to keep fighting. To you parents, this evening, there's a band of adversaries that would love to have your children. How long will you keep fighting? To the church leadership here this evening, Jesus says that the gates of hell will not prevail against his church, but the gates of hell are coming. How long will you stand and fight? Eleazar was tired. He could hardly go anymore. The reason I know he was so wore out is his hand muscles were so cramped that he couldn't even release them. I've swung a hammer for quite a few years, and I've swung it some pretty long days, and I've never swung it to the point where my hand wouldn't let go of my hammer. That tells you a little bit about the effort, the level of physical effort that this man was putting into defending the plot of ground that he must defend. He could have gave up. He said, I just can't do this anymore. He could have took off running and said, you see, my hand won't even release from my sword. I'm done. But he wouldn't give up. He wouldn't give in. He fought until the Lord wrought a great victory. Galatians 6 and verse 9 says, "And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season ye shall reap if ye faint not." We would not read about this man Eliezer had he turned and ran and finally gave up when he got tired. We wouldn't read anything about him. But he had a job to do, and he wouldn't give up, and he reaped a reward in due season because he fainted not, and God wrought a great victory. Then the account here of Shammah, different people pronounce it different ways. Verses 11 and 12. I'm going to reread this. "And after him was Shammah, the son of Agi, the Hararite. And the Philistines were gathered together into a troop. There was a piece of ground full of lentils, and the people fled from the Philistines. But he stood in the midst of the ground and defended it, and slew the Philistines, and the Lord wrought a great victory." You see, this man, Shammah, he did not have the benefit that Eliezer did. And it's why I picked him out to title the message this evening, this account, to title the message after this account. Because the man Eliezer, he did have three other men with him fighting. But Shammah had just got abandoned by everyone around him. I want you to think for just a minute the courage that it took to stand there by himself as the Philistines were approaching, coming to get these beans. We might assume that perhaps they were about ready for harvest, hence Shammah and others being out there ready to harvest. But the Philistines had them outnumbered. It says there was a troop. We don't know how many there was in a troop, but apparently they were vastly outnumbering the Israelites. But all Shammah cared about was he was supposed to defend the bean field. He could have said, "But it's only a bean field. Why am I going to defend this? This isn't the only crop we have. Is this worth me dying for? It's only a bean field. I'm not standing here and doing this. This job isn't very necessary. Who cares? It's only beans. I'll let them have it." I had to ask myself the question. I'll ask you this evening. Do you think that Shammah thought he would whoop all them Philistines? I don't think he had that thought for a minute. I really doubt that he had any idea he was going to win that battle that day. But he was going to do his job for as long as he was given the ability to do the job. He was going to be faithful. He knew what he was commissioned to do. He knew what he was called to do. He had the kind of courage and the faithfulness that we need today, brothers and sisters. There's no arrogance evident here. There's no self-glory in defending a bean field. He wasn't here to make a name for himself. He was just here to fulfill his calling. His calling was to defend this field of beans. The Philistines came, and he beat. And they came again, more of them, and he won. He's still standing. I would expect it. He was rather surprised after a while that he was still alive. But he kept on fighting. And the Lord wrought a great victory. You see, it wasn't Shammah. It was the Lord. Shammah didn't go back and have heralds going in front of him saying, "Hey, I won. I won. Look what I did. Come out here and gather them up." The Lord wrought a great victory. It's only a bean field. Brothers and sisters, what's God called you to this evening? I hear people say they want to do big things for the Lord. They want to make a big impact. Several years ago, that was a word I was hearing a lot. How people want to make an impact. They want to make an impact for the Lord, an impact. They want to impact people. Who wants to defend the bean field? Just a lowly bean field. We hear the Great Commission, "Go ye into all the world." And our minds go to jungle bushes, desert tribes, adventure, and stories that we can bring back home and share with those of all that we endured for the cause of Christ. And there's a place for that. But who wants to defend the bean field? The local crop at home. The crop that doesn't, the field of harvest, it doesn't look very big. Doesn't really have any glory attached with it. What adventure is there in guarding a bean field? I'd like to guard a city or a town, or I'd like to guard the king. Wouldn't we rather be a guard for the king than a guard in the bean field? Whatever happened to serving faithfully at home? You know, brothers and sisters, all the world is not overseas. The world is not all overseas. All the world includes your family, your neighbors, your co-workers. But that's not a big impact. I'm not sure who it was, but I remember several times I've heard my father quote another minister from years gone by that I never knew. But he's quoted him multiple times, and this man, whoever he was, says the most anyone can do for the Lord is raise a family for the Lord. Shammah defended the bean field, and the Lord wrought a great victory. You fulfill your calling. You defend your bean field. And brothers and sisters, I can promise you one thing: the Lord will have a great victory. We're going to leave him there. He fulfilled his calling. He was chosen to be one of David the king, one of his bodyguards. You see, Shammah might have said, "I would rather guard the king, but I was sent here to guard this bean field." But he was so faithful in defending that bean field that he got moved to be one of David's bodyguards, one of his mighty men, because he was faithful in a little thing. We're going to move ahead, verses 13 through 17. I'm not going to take the time and read that. But we have three men here that are not named. One commentary I read suggests that their names were Abishai and Benaiah, and then the third one was unnamed. One commentator puts it that those two men listed later are actually these two of the three men that went and fetched David his water. But I don't know that for sure. So I'm going to call them three unnamed men. Maybe they were these other two, I'm not sure. But they risked everything for another's wishes. You see, as I had mentioned that this was the... Let me look here and make sure I get it right. Yes, verse 13. "And three of the 30 chief went down and came to David in the harvest time unto the cave of Adullam." So it was for sure, it was the time of harvest. a time that was known to be dry. They did not harvest in the rain. So it was a dry time. The weather was hot. Springs were drying up. Creeks were running low. And most likely, if these men were staying in the rocks and in the caves, hiding from the Philistines, they were really short on fresh water. But they did have water. And probably one day, perhaps as they were dipping another dipper full of water out of that stagnant pool that was outside of their cave, David said, "Oh, I just wish I had a drink of water from home. I've been places where the water didn't taste quite like I was used to. I'm not a big fan of city water. It's just a little too much chlorine in that for me. Sometimes I say, if I'm around that, I say, I just want to go home and get a drink of good water." These three men heard David say this: "I just wish I had a drink from the well in Bethlehem." David's hometown. "I wish I had some good old home water." You know, David didn't need that water. David had something to drink. The men were surviving. They did have water to drink. David did not need that water. He simply wished for it. David did not command these men to go get that water. They simply wanted to fulfill the wishes of their leader, the one who would be their future king. The lesson I would like for us to consider here this evening is, what are you willing to do? What are you willing to risk? What am I willing to risk just to bring pleasure to my king? We ask the question sometimes, and I've challenged some in the past. It's the wrong question to ask. We ask, what do we have to do? Let me ask you, brothers and sisters, what's your calling in life? What are you created for? Revelation 4 and verse 11 gives us a pretty good picture of what we were created for. It says, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for Thou hast created all things, and for Thy pleasure they are and were created." Brothers and sisters, you were created this evening to bring God pleasure. You were created to bring Him glory, to bring Him honor, and also just to make Him happy, just to make Him pleased. If you want to fulfill a life that is fulfilling, if you want a life that is full of purpose, be pleasing to your King. Bring God pleasure. These men here give us an example of how we should bring our God pleasure. They were willing to risk everything. They were willing to risk their lives, their very lives, just to make David happy. Just to get him something that he wanted but he didn't need. Are we going to search the scriptures and see what's the bare minimum that we can do and get by? How much of self and my pleasure can I hold on to and still make it? These are questions that are maybe not always asked in word, but they roll through our minds perhaps. How much can I be conformed to the world and still be called a Christian? These three men did not have to go to Bethlehem and get him a drink of water to be considered part of David's men. They did this because they wanted to please David, their leader, their soon-to-be king. You'll hear comments, "You don't need to do that to be a Christian." Yeah, these men didn't need to get that water either. It was not a command. Can we serve our King in the same way? Risk it all. They say pull out all stops and give it all we got. Do whatever we can to please our King, our God. Can you risk seeing yourself as not so important? These men could have said, hey, someone else can go. I'm one of David's closest people here. I shouldn't risk my life. What if I get killed? I can't do that. Who's going to guard David if I get killed, getting him a drink of water, of all things? Someone else can do that. Can we risk our reputation? If these men had failed in their attempt, they would have been a laughingstock and a mockery. What did they think they were doing? They went and just destroyed themselves over a cup of water. They risked it all and came back with the water just to see it poured on the ground. Can we serve our God with the same wholehearted devotion? Down in verse 20, we're going to skip over Abishai. We don't have time to look at all of these. In verse 20, we see a man, Benaiah. Something sticks out to me here about this man. He did some pretty amazing things himself. But the first thing it says in Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man. Benaiah had a good example in his father. In fact, depending on how you read these verses, I'm not an English major. So depending on how you would structure these sentences, it would actually appear like that Benaiah's father had done some of this list here. That perhaps he was the one who slew the two lion-like men. Perhaps he was the one that went down in the pit and slew the lion. I'm not sure. But I want to leave that as a possibility. Because the scripture says he was a very valiant or a courageous man. Very faithful, very courageous. So we could say here it was like father, like son. The challenge here I want to leave with you from this man, one of the points I would like to look at is to you fathers, what for example are you leaving for your sons? Are your sons, can it be said of them that they are the son of a faithful man? Can it be said of your sons that they are the son of a godly man? A man that will not give up. A man that has courage to serve his God. That's part of the reason why I think it's very likely that Jehoiada is actually the one who did some of these acts. And then in verse 21, we find that Benaiah, he went after this Egyptian for some reason. We're not told. Totally outmatched. If a cubit is 18 inches, then this man stood at least 7'6" tall. His spear was huge, and all Benaiah had was a staff, a shepherd's staff. But he went after him, and he turned the man's weapon into the device by which he was killed. No one wants to be killed with their own weapon. But this Egyptian suffered that humiliation at the hands of Benaiah. God has given some people the ability to confront the skeptics and the atheists and turned their own logic against them and put them to silence using their own words and their own logic. And God will wrought a great victory. And God used Benaiah, and he'll use you. Now as we go back, we're coming towards the end of the message here. Thinking back over these men, how many of these men set out to do great things? How many of these men set out, we're going to make a big impact for our God? We're going to do the big jobs. We're going to do the big things. We'll make a name. Everyone's going to know what we accomplished. Do you think there was a competitive spirit among these men? 37 in all, it says in verse 39 of that chapter. Do you think there was a competitive spirit trying to get ahead, trying to be the best? I want to be on top. Do you think that there was any grumbling and cutting each other down so that I can get to the top? How many of these men set out to get their names recorded in the record books? No. From what we can read here this evening, they were simply given a task, and they were faithful to that task. Did they win these battles? Did they win these fights that they were involved in due to their size, their skill, or their strength? No. The Lord wrought a great victory. They won. They overcame because they would not give up. They simply did their job one at a time. Brothers and sisters, sometimes we may be called to a task. Sometimes it may seem a bit overwhelming. But I want us to look back in the Old Testament, and I want us to look at these kinds of stories, these kinds of historical accounts, and we can see what God will do with a man who will stand his ground and be faithful to whatever he was called. And take courage. If God cared enough to protect Shammah as he defended a bean field, do you think he will care for you and the thing that he has called you to do? It might be hard. Probably will be. No one said it would be easy. In fact, if you read through the New Testament talking about the Christian life, it's called a war, it's called a race, it's called a struggle. It doesn't sound easy. Don't kid yourself, the world don't have it easy either. So you might as well take this hard task, because we got one that'll help us. They overcame because they would not give up. It was their faithfulness in the small things that made them faithful in larger things. What have you been called to do? Are you faithfully serving in the calling that God has given you? One thing I want to mention, we're going to close with prayer here before too long, and I'll ask Brother Marvin Hayde to come forward and lead us in our closing prayer while he's coming forward. I will say something that I think we do. I don't want to hurry over something and miss a point, and that is, these men did not set out to do great things. They didn't win on their own strength, skill, or size. But I don't believe that Shammah began being faithful the day that he was put in charge of the bean field. I don't know how old this man was at that time, but I would like to submit to you that I think he was probably a faithful young man before he was ever put in front of the bean field. David did not kill Goliath for his first test. God tested David with a lion and a bear. He proved him. And then he gave him Goliath to deal with. You may be a young person here this evening. You may be waiting on God to call you to a great task. But I want to encourage you, young people, be faithful in whatever it is that God has called you to do. Be faithful in your work. Be faithful in your obedience at home and helping out with the chores at home, whatever they may be, whatever your age is. But be faithful in the little things. It's the little things that get us practiced up for the harder times. It's the little things when we see God being faithful to us and seeing us through the little trials that we face. We realize that there's no trial too big for Him. Are you faithful in serving Him? We're going to come before the Lord in prayer, and I'll ask Brother Marvin if he would lead us in our closing prayer.
All who are able, would you please stand for prayer?